Father, we just thank you that you care for us, you look after us, even in the details of life. Thank you for providing us water this morning. We take a lot of things for granted, and we know that we don't have to have many of the things that we like to have, and yet we always are thankful when you provide. And just thank you for this time this morning, Lord, to again reflect on this important responsibility that we have as parents. Help us to be faithful in our reading of the scriptures. Help us to be practical as we think through different illustrations, if we think through different practical type of examples that we might encounter, and that this might prove to be helpful to your body here, and that we might establish a culture that holds high your word in yet another area of life, and an area that affects each and every one of us, that affects our families, that affects our godly heritage, which you have given us. Help us to do that and to do that faithfully. In Christ's name we pray. We've been looking at what I will say is the core section of our material, which is how to raise wise and godly children. And we started last week looking at the first point of that, which is training your child to obey. And I made the point that if you're not effective in training your child to obey, if your child's not obeying you, anything else you try to do with your child is not going to go very far. Yeah, you may be able to influence here and there, but for the most part, if your children aren't listening to you, you've fallen short at first base. You're never going to get to home plate going at that route. So that's why we're going to give a lot of attention to this, and we started last week looking at some examples. But before we do that, I did pass out some homework last week. And I know some of you may not have been here. Is there anyone here who did not get the article? It's a second Piper article I passed out called "Why Require Unregenerate Children to Act Like They're Good." Who did not get that? Anybody here? Ethan? Anybody else? Okay. Did you all get a chance to read it? Yeah? What did you see in the article that you found worth commenting on? Good or bad? I assume mostly good because it's Piper. I mean, after all, what could be bad about Piper, right? No, but I'm open. If anybody has a question, a concern, a doubt, but or if you have something that you saw there that kind of struck you, like, good point. Anyone? This is open response opportunity.
I know what it. There was a part that I didn't like when he said something about what good would it be do to make them read the Bible. I disagree with that because you're still reading it. You're still.
Yeah. There was a point just
even if he didn't want to
bring it to mind for folks who may not remember. I know exactly what she's talking about because I kind of looked at that and went maybe. he's talking about He thought there was a limit on, like, for teenagers, to make a teenager sit and read the Bible when they've rejected God probably wasn't very productive. And Nancy's saying, not so sure about that, or she disagrees with that. We had kids that were in rebellion in their teenage years, not all of them, fortunately, but we had one or two that were in a level or two of rebellion, and we made them come to church with us. And they grumped about it, and they didn't like it. And they told us they didn't need to come to church. They didn't believe in going to church. And they're going to church today as adults. And I think, in part, the things that they learned in church were helpful to them. Now, I know it's not reading the Bible, and different maybe. But, just because there's rejection there, you do what you can as a parent. And sometimes you do, hope against hope sort of thing. You're hoping the Lord will do good on it. So, yeah, good point there. Anything else that came out of that? You see his point, of course. Can you understand the weight of the argument, which is some people at first they go, wait a minute, we don't want to be training our kids to be hypocrites. And he's saying, hey, there's value in it. Even if they're not, obviously your kids are born unbelievers. And so what are you going to do, give up all training for the first however many years until they become a believer? And will they ever become a believer if you don't talk to them about it? Doesn't make any sense, does it? But some people have fallen into that trap or they're bothered by that, I thought it was, he made his first point was that the rest of the people in the world around you will appreciate it if nobody else. That's one thing that we need to remember about raising our kids. We always think about how it affects us, and hopefully we think about how it affects our faithfulness to God. But there's an element of training kids where you're actually showing love for your neighbor. And we forget that when we have kids. You know, if you think back when you were single, if you're having kids now and you sometimes forget that, and think about how you felt when a family came into a restaurant with ill-behaved children, and you just kind of went, oh, no. Right? Or they came over your house and started, you know, like the old cat in the hat, thing one and thing two, running through the house, tearing things up. Yeah, that didn't feel good, did it? And so, in a way, people around you are affected by how you train your kids as well. And it's part of our love for our neighbor. So, all right, well, I just wanted to kind of bring that up. We may not always pass out a Piper article, but I thought he had a couple of good ones there. Stephen mentioned it was a follow-up he did to the one I passed out last time. I don't know if I'll pass that out or not, just make you aware that it's out there. I did read it. It was good. So, continuing on with the material. Last week, under the idea of training your child, the first thing we pointed out is that as a parent, you are always training your child, even if you're not teaching him in the way he should go. And you'll remember we said that if you are not teaching him, you're training him all right, but you're training him to do what his nature tells him to do, which is evil and bad. And you are confirming his evil behavior by not stopping him, by not saying something to him. And then we also showed that sometimes, and this is kind of a depressing point, but it's one we have to acknowledge, sometimes even parents who attempt to instruct their child in good behavior end up unintentionally training their child to disobey them by the way they allow the child to react to instructions. And we gave several examples. We're not done yet. We're kind of in the middle of this section, which is why I felt the need for us to go back through how we got started on this. This is tough because here you're looking at a parent who, you're not looking at a parent who's just sitting on the couch reading a book, watching a movie, ignoring their kids. Those people shouldn't expect to have any good things come out of their behavior. Here's a parent who's trying, but their efforts, instead of teaching the child to obey, which is their desire and what they're trying to do, they're actually doing the reverse. They're actually confirming their children in their disobedience as they try to train them. This is alarming. So we want to make sure we warn you about this. We gave several illustrations that we looked at last week, and I want to get you all to help me remember some of those different illustrations or different. What are some ways that parents can negatively train your children by the way they respond to certain behavior in their kids? Help me. Anybody think of some? Asking several times. Yes. So, you know, you tell them, and you tell them again. Okay, so what does that do when you ask your kids multiple times? Yeah, it trains them not to listen the first time. They say, ooh, hey, we can wait. How many times can we wait? Right? Yeah, that was a big one. What else? We listed several.
Bribery.
What? Bribery. Yes. We gave the illustration of the mom as a two-year-old running away in a store. Come here, honey, I'll give you a piece of candy. You know, we'll go out for some ice cream if you let the doctor look down your throat. Yeah. What's the problem with bribery? What does that train your child to do?
What's in it for me?
Hmm?
What's in it for me?
Yeah, what's in it for me? They're obeying for the wrong reasons. And that in and of itself is reason not to do it. But there's a practical problem, which is that eventually they're going to figure out they can raise the price. And eventually they're going to raise the price to a point where you can't even bribe them. Again, you shouldn't do it because it's wrong in the first place, but there's a practical outcome that you especially don't want. Good.
It's okay to reward them with ice cream when they are well behaved in the doctor's office.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, nothing wrong with being nice to your kid, rewarding your kid. Hey, I appreciate what you did today. Here's a piece of candy afterwards. But not as a condition, not, oh, would you do this? And here's the bargain, the deal. You know, and it should be sort of random. I mean, you know, at least I was that way with my kids. But, yeah, I used to, when I wanted my kids to make good grades. So, and they were smart enough, I knew they could do good in school. And if they didn't do good, it was usually because something was going wrong with them. And what I would do is after they, if they got a good report card, I said, let's go celebrate. Okay. But I didn't say, you know, if you don't make good grades, we're not going to give you whatever. It wasn't like that. It was just, and some may say, well, that's just really kind of semantics, isn't it? But no, I think it's important. It's an important distinction. I think it's an important distinction.
If he did everything he was supposed to. So is that too much on the side of the bribery instead of the reward?
What do you think?
I mean, it worked. He did wonderful.
Yeah, and rewards will work for a while sometimes, right? I mean.
But that's a little different than he's messing up. He's acting up.
Yeah.
And he's
not trying to correct a behavior. You're more setting the precedent.
That's a little different. That's just saying, here's the goal.
Yeah.
It's an incentive for a bigger thing. It's not like if it were like one thing, you know, go over and be nice, go over and say something to your friend. No, I don't want to. Well, here, I'll give you the candy.
Okay.
To me, that's different. Do you agree with that?
I can see a distinction there.
And probably not do it all the time at home, but it makes sense when you're like in public setting.
Right.
He's going to have a tendency to really struggle to obey if he's around a crazy kid. So,
Well, and I know one of our biggest struggles is when we have to leave a place.
Yeah.
And so him knowing that he hasn't finished the whole thing until he's in the car.
Well, but I mean, I was just reading Deuteronomy that it's like God makes it very clear. If you obey me, here are your blessings.
Yeah.
So it's kind of the same idea.
Yeah, it can be a fine point sometimes. I'll come back to what the counselor used to always tell me, you're the parent. But the warning is, though, be careful that you're not sliding into that territory where you're putting a price on it. You know, sometimes we make judgment calls on those kind of things. You ultimately will, you know, will bear the fruit of that one way or the other. Usually it becomes kind of obvious. If you're open to the danger and you're aware of it and you're watching and you see the distinction there. Again, like some people thought the report card celebration that I did was kind of in that category. And I sort of beg the difference that I thought it was a distinction there. I was the parent, so I did it. And, you know, if I had kids that wasn't succeeding or they were saying, so where are we going next time? You know, and then they came home with Fs, you might say, maybe you got into the bribery territory there. Might want to be careful about that. What's that?
When it starts becoming an expectation.
Yeah. I think that becomes a big factor in it. Same time, even without the reward, we'll see this later in training in righteousness, but I'll just, since it's very close to this kind of situation, one of the pieces of advice that I saw in some of the books that I've read, I thought was good, was that I think it was Ginger Plowman and Don't Make Me Count the Three, said that one of the things she did when she and her kids were on their way in the car to a situation where she knew the kids would be likely to be subject to above normal temptation or above likelihood to fail. On the way there, she was drilling them. So how are we supposed to behave in the grocery store? And the kids said, we're not supposed to pull stuff off the shelf. We're not supposed to bug you to death about buying stuff. And that's right. That's very good. Now, that's what you're not supposed to do. What are you supposed to do? You know, we're supposed to be obedient. You know, she would just drill them on this and kind of renew it in their minds. And she said that seemed to be helpful. It didn't solve all problems, obviously. She still had to deal with problems in the grocery store sometimes. That's a place the kids love to try you because you're in public and they know there's a little bit of difficulty in immediate disciplining sometimes, especially in today's society. You have to be careful, and the kids know that. They're aware. They're aware when you're limited, and they will play you for all it's worth in those situations. But there was a case where even though a reward wasn't offered, just telling them ahead of time was preventative to some degree. So all those things are helpful any place you can get them in. One other example we have, and I found another comic this week in the paper. Every day as I read the comics, I'm seeing examples. We talked about, it was along the line of giving a reward. Only this was the case where you reward the kid by, if they don't do what they're supposed to do, you're going to jump in and help them. And many times end up doing it for them. That's in effect rewarding bad behavior. And I know we talked about an exception last week where there was an extraordinary situation that Ted Tripp talked about, and there are always these exceptions that come up. But as a general rule, again, probably not a good idea, Or you could end up like this comic in Baby Blues this week. This is a classic situation. The daughter has a homework assignment, and it's due suddenly. So mom and dad are working on the homework assignment. Dad says, Zoe is the daughter. Shouldn't Zoe be doing her project by herself? And the mom says, she is. I'm helping her polish it up a little. See how we deceive ourselves sometimes. Filling in a few details, correcting her spelling, composing an original soundtrack for the multimedia presentation. And Dad says, good job on your report, Zoe. And Zoe's over there playing with her little paddle going, what report? Zoe's long since forgotten that she's even doing a report. Zoe feels no weight of responsibility. The parents have gotten in, they're feeling all the weight, and they're rewarding the kid, and they're not training the kid. They're missing a training opportunity, both. Something you got to watch out for, negative training. It's we all, as parents, did that or do that. it's going to happen somewhere. It'll sneak up on you. That's why I bring out practical examples and multiply them. We could probably go on for 6 weeks multiplying examples. We won't do that, but we will finish a few more this week. I had a couple more I want to bring to your attention. Here's another area of negative training. A child can be trained to give an excuse for disobedience or wrongdoing. It's a law of human nature. If you ask for an excuse, you'll get one. We all know this. We know this with adults. In fact, you are likely to receive one whether you ask for it or not. Excuses are attempts to share or avoid altogether the responsibility for wrongdoing. Parents who ask their child why he disobeyed or did something wrong may be attempting to understand the reason. So he's giving credit here that it could be for good motivation. However, he says, the reason why they did something or didn't do something is not nearly as important as the fact of the deed. In other words, if they are doing something that's bad, it doesn't matter why they did it. It's bad. They disobeyed you. Only after a child's guilt has been firmly established as fact should the parents attempt to analyze the reason. The reason does not alter the fact of the guilt. And this is a subtle one. It can sneak up on you. I read a book recently. It's actually an older book. It was written like in the 60s. At the time when psychotherapy was starting to, the modern version of psychotherapy we now see in so many places was really starting to take root and take off. And this is written by a guy who was trained in the modern methods of psychotherapy, the Freudian type approach where you do all the kind of things they do nowadays and excuse people from all responsibility. And he just, in a very pragmatic way, realized this doesn't work. I think he was put in charge as a psychologist by a rich family of babysitting one of their kids, and he was trying to use all these modern psychotherapeutic principles and blaming the kid's parents and letting the kid get away with that, and it was just making the kid worse and worse and worse. And he finally just said, enough of this already. So he just said, I'm just going to do what seems obvious here. He started using common sense principles, and one of them was he did not let the kid make an excuse for himself. If the kid did something wrong, he made sure there were consequences for it. And suddenly the kid's behavior really improved. And he never told anybody that he was not following the principles he was taught by in school. In fact, I think he was doing this as a student teacher, kind of supposed to be applying principles. He was being congratulated on his good application of the psychological therapeutic principles, and he actually was doing just the opposite. And one of the points, he went on to become a practicing counselor and one who was very successful in his practice. And one of the things that he emphasized over and over is it doesn't matter why somebody does something wrong. If you go asking them why they did it, they're going to give you 1,000 reasons why they did it, and they're going to feel justified. He said you just simply confront them with the fact they did wrong and need to do better, need to do otherwise. And this was a secular guy. This was not a Christian. So this is human nature. The writer here, Fugate, is the writer that I got this from. He says, one of the reasons parents ask for an excuse is because they inwardly want the child to have one. This is the insidious part about this. They hope there's sufficient justification to prevent any need for an unpleasant confrontation. So unfortunately, we're looking for an excuse or a reason to excuse the child. Because we don't want to have to deal with the unpleasant consequence of disciplining. Disciplining is not fun. We all know this. Confrontation is not fun. Nobody likes that, unless you're sick. It's unpleasant. You'd rather avoid it. So there's a kind of a secret hope that maybe there was a good reason why Johnny completely did the opposite of what I told him to do, even though I made it perfectly clear what he was supposed to do. Hope against hope kind of thing. Sometimes parents look for excuses for their child's misbehavior in order to protect their own pride. If a child's action can be excused, then the parents can deceive themselves into not accepting any responsibility for their child's poor training. Because remember, ultimately, the child's behavior, while the child is responsible for their misbehavior, you as a parent are ultimately responsible because you're the one that's supposed to be restraining them and overseeing them and training them. So if your child, especially in a situation where others can see the child, you're embarrassed, and then you can say, well, no, there's a reason why, you know, he's not feeling good today, or whatever the case may be, whatever excuse you come up with, or that you let Johnny come up with, and so you're going to try to pass that off to other people. It probably won't sell, but they're not going to say anything.
I have a question about that.
Yes.
With excuses, is that more for you as a parent with your child to think, oh, he's tired, so I'll let him throw a temper tantrum, whatever. And I know that's not right, but what about with other people if he's misbehaving? Or like sometimes when Brian's teething or whatever, I'm like, oh, I'm sorry, he's teething. Is that basically, can I give the excuse to other people, or that's just is not?
You're talking about like other people's kids?
No, like just in general, like if he was in here screaming, I was like, I'm sorry, y'all, he's teething, but... Do you see what I'm saying? It's different, giving excuses to other versus letting the excuse affect your parenting. Does that make any sense?
I'm not sure I'm quite following you on that.
Okay, so a couple of weeks ago when Jaden had his major meltdown, I mean, most of y'all know that's not his normal behavior, but he, and it was our fault that he didn't get enough sleep that night before, but he wasn't able to handle his disappointment of what he wanted to do during church and what we told him he needed to be doing near church. And so we had a complete meltdown, and he just couldn't recover from it. So I didn't feel bad telling y'all, you didn't get enough sleep. Like, that's where our meltdown is. But he knows, no matter if he's tired, he should. And so I told him, like, I know you're tired. I know you're having a hard time handling this, but you should have obeyed. And because you kept throwing a fit, that's why you then missed the music, which caused you to throw another fit, you know, like, so he knows that we know he was tired, but that doesn't excuse the fact that he completely had a meltdown. And
That's what you're talking about there. Cause that, I mean, not that specific situation, but I like the way that you've laid that out.
But
you know,
the distinction between giving an excuse and giving an explanation.
Sure.
I mean, I see a difference there. I mean, the situations here, I don't see that as being this, you know, a parent who's not going to do anything about it and yet just give an excuse for, oh, well, you know, he's just a child, he'll grow out of it, you know, different things like this whereby you're trying to explain away your own parenting rather than giving an explanation for, okay, we don't normally see that out of the child, or even if we do, it's like, well, we're working on training. We're working on this particular thing right now. We're working on obedience the first time right now, giving an explanation for these things.
Yeah.
So maybe more like, you know, you hit a child, well, because they hit me first. Like, that, I mean, that's an excuse, but it's not right. So it's still maybe like that? Like, them excusing them hitting a child because a child hit them first, or,
I just meant, like, the whole thing with, you know, a child does something, maybe a child hits another child, and it's like, oh, sorry about that, you know, blah, 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 you know, excusing it away rather than, you know, if you feel like you need to explain to somebody that, you know, that's something we're working on right now, then I see that being different than just excusing away the behavior as if, you know, this isn't something to be concerned about, you know, a way of just whitewashing the behavior itself.
Yeah, the thing I liked about the way Karen laid it out in her example with their son is that, you know, she's she's seeing the reasons behind it and understanding it, but at the same time, she's not allowing it to be called anything but what it was, disobedience and something that's not acceptable, ultimately something you're going to train out. So the distinction was kept there. Because there are a lot of things, even with adults, it's one thing to understand certain behavior, but it's another thing to say that that excuses a bad response. You know,
what you're saying is don't gloss over the opportunity to discipline based off of excuse the child gave you or what you think is the problem.
Yeah, because otherwise you end up with adults who are not, and my wife gave it when we were going over this, I go through this material with her and get her to help me remember things that we did or just get her assessment of things, and she pointed out how she has a stepbrother who was trained by a dad who, and they both have the same problem. When they get hungry, they become very easily angered and they lose their temper and they just lose it. And it's constant. And of course, how often do you get hungry? You know, but especially if they go past a meal time for whatever reason, they're late on getting their meal or whatever. And she said, you know, my dad was bad about that. My brother was bad about that. And then she kind of slyly winked and said, and her daughter has that problem. His daughter has that problem sometimes too. Which she does, you know, many a time. And that's just, again, that's something that starts as a kid and they never got trained out of it. And so now you have a problem in the adult. It doesn't excuse them. It's understandable. I mean, all of us, when we're hungry, we tend to not be at our best behavior. But we can't allow that to go. I mean, there have been many, many murder cases have been tried where you could look at somebody murdered somebody else and you could say, well, I can understand why you murdered that person. That person would have been driving me crazy too. Yeah, but you don't get to blow their head off just because they were driving you crazy. So that's the distinction there. So did we get to the bottom of all that? Was there any other discussion? Good discussion. Yes, Sarah.
That's a follow-up. I mean, Liam is a particular breed of child.
Particular what?
Liam.
Yes.
A breed of child. A particular breed of
child. Oh, breed of child. I got you. Okay.
He's not even two, and even at 1 year old, he just has these crazy meltdowns. And so, like, in Jaden's case, you know, he's old enough, like, y'all can discipline him, you can give him a spank, but, like, at one, is there something that you would recommend that we do? Because you're right, like, I can't just excuse him having a meltdown and throwing a temper tantrum, even at 1 year old.
Right.
But I do need to give him discipline, but, like, he's still a little bit too young.
What makes you think he's too young to spank?
I would think.
You would? Okay.
Or just, well, I mean, even Pablo's dog. I mean, you know, he just, when he acts that way, here's the bad consequence. He doesn't have to,
like, I mean,
you know, cognitively understand the discipline. I mean, he just sees that, every time I act this way, ouch. And then...
Yeah, my thought on too young or not too young, and I know that, you know, there gets to be a lot of concern about that, and I understand that. But if they're old enough to get disobey you, then it seems to me like they're old enough to be disciplined.
Okay.
I, you know, it's pretty clear. But that's a good question.
Let me recap that.
Okay.
Are you guys saying that even at an extremely young age, a particular consequence that your corporal punishment thing, whatever, although it may not be put together by the child, sooner or later they're going to realize as they get older this is what happens when this happens. So therefore, you can't be too young? Is that what you're saying?
I mean, there could be an age that's so young that they don't, you feel like they're not understanding what they're doing. But if you perceive, and you're the parent, you make this judgment, if you perceive that they understand what they're doing, then that, in my mind, was the trigger for worthiness of discipline. I mean, sometimes you get a little baby comes, you know, starts crying when it's hungry. You know, you want to say, hey, you're not supposed to be crying. Spank, you know, that, come on. But if you, but how about a baby on the changing table decides you're not going to let you change him and he starts kicking you? Okay. Well, you know. There you go. So how young is that? I mean, you know, if they're old enough to rebel, they're old enough to some form of discipline. Now, obviously, you cater the discipline to the age. You're not going to get a whomping stick, but you know, a little slap on the upper leg while you're on the changing table could be totally appropriate.
6 months, because I didn't feel like he actually understood. He kind of was in his own world, but I feel like he's so much more aware now that I don't know, it just, yeah, it's like you said, he's able to obey, he gets it, he knows what he's doing, and he responds well. I tested it real carefully at first to see, oh, he knows he's not supposed to do it. Wow, he's smart.
So. Yeah, our kids are a lot smarter than we give them credit for, although ironically, you know, we want to brag on how smart they are in other areas, and then when it comes to discipline, well, I'm not sure he gets it, you know. we struggle because nobody likes to spank a baby, for heaven's sake. But here's some comfort for you. The earlier you start, the easier it is. And the later you start, and in some cases where you have a parent who's been doing a poor job of disciplining for a number of years, either through ignorance or what have you, and then suddenly they decide to kick you into gear and start disciplining, they're gonna see a level of escalation for a while, and they're gonna feel like, oh, this doesn't work. And I would say, give it some time if you haven't been, if you're changing the game, so to speak. The kid's gonna resist the change. And I remember even I've told you stories about the counselor that counseled us even when we had a teenager. And we were not knowing how to deal with certain things that came up in the teenage years. There was some uniqueness about it that made it so it was just as straightforward as, you know, grab him up and spank him because he was getting too big to deal with. So we changed the game on them, and we found ways to escalate and put misery into their life as a form of discipline. And the counselor said, now, before you do this, be prepared. He's going to escalate. And it will end, but you have to stand your ground, and you have to not give up. And sure enough, escalation did occur in spades. And we did stand our ground, although at points in the middle of it, we're going, really? It has to go this far? And it did. And finally, things settled down. And that was why it was helpful in our case to have an outside voice that was not involved in somebody who had experience working with families and so forth, a Christian. So that was a case where we needed some help in some areas that was a little outside of what our experience taught us. So anyhow. All right. Let me move on from here.
Young,
yes. Yeah, and that's the difference between being miserable and crying and having an angry, rebellious cry. Again, as a parent, you'll read those things eventually, and you'll see it. You know the difference. Here's another example of how kids can are quick to, on their feet to come up with a manipulation. The mom comes in, the boy's classic case, got his hand in a cookie jar, and he says, what? I was going to show Joey what a great cook you are. Aww. No, don't be fooled. So, in conclusion, negative training results when parents tolerate their child's bad behavior and thereby inadvertently train him not to follow their instructions. So here's just again, of course, we've had a lot of discussion. We might, I throw these in just in case we don't have discussion. But was anyone surprised at the idea that we as parents are always training our children and that those who do not train their children to be obedient are in effect training them to be disobedient? Did that surprise anybody, or is that kind of like, well, yeah, duh? Anybody surprised by that? Well, good. You guys are smarter than I thought.
Are you going to address at some point, if this isn't the time, but what about the person that just says spanking doesn't work?
Yeah, I'm going to address that. Yeah, we got a whole section on spanking. I really, even though we're referencing spanking, we really haven't talked about spanking in any kind of detail. So, yeah, if we could defer till then. We will definitely. This is just negative training by what you don't do. And of course, spanking comes up. It always does. I think we had enough share. I'm going to go ahead and bypass this example here because I want to get into a little bit more of the new material before we close up for today because I'm watching my time here. Okay, so we're back to our verse, train up a child in the way he should go. When it comes to teaching a child obedience, we've seen that it is all too easy to train up a child in the way he should not go. We've been talking about that. Now we want to look at how we go about training a child in the way that he should go. So I don't like just to always teach the negative, say, don't do this, and then we move on. We want to say, well, so what should we do? And lots of ways to break this down. I recommended a book to you by Ginger Plowman. I've referenced it a couple times, even this morning, Don't Make Me Count to Three. And she makes what I believe to be a sound biblical case that God wants our children to obey us and him all the way, right away, and with a happy heart. These are some bullet points that she puts out there. So let's walk through these and see how she presents this. We want our children obeying all the way. And this is a quote from her book. It says, the Bible states that obedience must be complete. God demonstrates the importance of complete obedience to the life of King Saul in 1 Samuel 15. God told Saul to completely destroy the Amalekites, including their livestock. Saul got to thinking what a waste it would be to kill all the livestock, so he took it upon himself to keep a few. After the battle, Samuel questioned King Saul by asking if he had fully obeyed God's command. Saul tried to justify his disobedience by stating he was only saving them to offer sacrifices to God. But Samuel replied, to obey is better than sacrifice. As a consequence of King Saul's lack of complete obedience, the kingdom was taken from him. So sometimes you can point to a teaching text, but sometimes a story speaks volumes. And I think this one speaks volumes. It's not enough to partially do what you're told to do. Obedience means doing everything that's included in what you've been told to do. So obeying all the way. I'll just walk through these quickly and then we'll have any discussion at the end. If we don't have time, we'll bring it up next time. Obedience should be right away. And she makes this statement, delayed obedience is disobedience. And we've kind of already hinted at this with the kids saying, wait a minute. A child should be trained to respond promptly the first time a parent gives a command. The parent should not have to yell, threaten, repeat instructions in order to achieve obedience. The command should be spoken in a normal voice only one time. The consequences of delayed obedience are seen in the life of Jonah. Here's another story from the Old Testament. God told Jonah to go to Nineveh. In the end, Jonah did go, but the consequences of his delayed obedience put his life and the life of many others in great spiritual and physical danger. And we're all familiar with how that played out. And then her last point, obedience should be with a joyful heart. God requires not only outward obedience, but also inward obedience. Happiness and contentment are heart choices. Children can choose to obey with a happy heart. Parents must guide them in doing so. Right attitudes are not issues of emotions, they are issues of the will, which means the child can choose to be happy and content, and God has called him to do this. We see passages even to us as Christians and adults. Do all things without grumbling or disputing. So it's not enough to say, yeah, fine, I'm gonna be kind to my brother, but it makes me mad. I'm going to grumble about it the whole time. Or I'm going to help somebody, but I'm going to complain. Not good enough. You've got to do it with a happy heart. Or the passage that says, rejoice always, pray without ceasing, give thanks in all circumstances. This is the will of God in Christ Jesus for you. This speaks to the heart. We're to rejoice in every circumstance, even bad situations where we can, in one sense, we can have tears. But we have to be, in one level, have a level of joy that this is what God has called us to sovereignly, and we can obey him in it. And just very quickly here, she makes one other distinction here. She said, children should be allowed to come and freely talk about their thoughts and feelings and ask questions, but this should be done with a pleasant tone of voice and with an attitude of respect. A child with a disrespectful attitude might say, why do you have to give me a ridiculous bedtime of 8 o'clock? A child who wants to address this issue respectfully might ask, now that I'm 9 years old, can we discuss my bedtime? There's a world of difference between those two questions, isn't there? And yet, in a way, the same issue is being addressed, but it's the approach of a child is completely different. And she's saying we need to insist on the respectful approach. Okay, so there she says it right there. It should be right away. It should be all the way, and it should be with a happy heart. Thoughts, concerns? Yes, and this will probably be our last discussion, but go ahead.
I really like the part about the child, you're choosing to be happy and content, because I feel like in today's society, everyone's just ruled by their emotions. Oh,
yeah.
I'm married, but that person was just so beautiful. Like, my heart just fell for that person.
Yeah.
And you made a commitment. You have control over things. And so,
yes.
Choosing them at a young age. Now, like, they have the ability to be in control of their emotions.
That's a great illustration of that idea. Yes, Martin.
I got all kinds of questions on the last one.
I'll bet. when I was writing that plan, I said, Martin's going to have a lot of questions on this one. Go ahead, Martin.
I think in my mind, I've always taken the last part with a joyful heart.
Yes.
I think that's something, this is my opinion, okay?
Gotcha.
That as time goes on, that also is a process and something that you learn. Sometimes it is learned more quickly. I've seen some children that don't seem like they've ever done anything but exactly what they're asked to do. We call them the perfect children.
Yeah.
I don't run into many of those. I've seen one or two in my lifetime. That's about it. Rest of them fit into the category of having issues as time goes on. Selfish issues. Sometimes just don't buy it issues. All kinds of different things. Guess what I'm asking is, if it's a process, or, well, let's just cut to the question, which is, at your younger ages, is that something that you can expect or train for? But let's start there.
I think you can expect that they will naturally want to do otherwise, but I think it's something that you can train them to do what they're supposed to do, and it is a process.
So you're saying, let me see if what you're saying, are you saying that the happy heart is probably not going to be there in the beginning?
Oh, yeah,
but that's
probably
part
not.
Of the training process. As
yes.
you go through it after the act is over, that then you come back maybe? Is this what you're saying? Come back, go through it, and see if we can't come to an understanding of what it should be like?
Yes.
When the child's not in that type of thing?
Yeah, because, and of course, we have a whole section coming later called, aiming for the heart. And this is one of the areas, of course, you're familiar with our background, having known us for many years. I think that's one of the areas where we fell short with Roger. We had, really good obedience in the early years. We were seen as a model family in terms of how we disciplined and so forth and how our kids obeyed. But we weren't hitting the heart, especially as they got older. There were several things that went into that. And that hearts were slipping away, and we were missing it, partly because I got too busy doing too much ministry stuff and got carried on. We know about all that. Well-intended, and we were doing good things in one sense for the Lord, but in another sense, we neglected an important area of life. And so that's the kind of thing, and of course, we realize, in a sense, she's saying the heart's a place where you can hide things. Obviously, a kid could pretend to be totally happy, and not be.
He's learned.
Yeah, so there could be deceit that goes on. You can't, we're not talking about being able to read minds. But what we're talking about on one level is obvious, overt expression of defiance and unhappiness. Call it disrespect, expression of disrespect, if you will. But partly, the heart's tied to that. I mean, it's a kind of a funny mix of things. If you allow defiance, it breeds defiance. And if you allow defiance to breed, it's a vicious cycle. It's the way we work as human beings. It's hard for us to move one way and then be thinking another. So you deal with what you see. And there is a lot of talking that goes on. That's again, we're going to hit that when we get to the training of the heart. It's not just all addressed as a discipline issue, though you have to address it as a discipline issue, but we want to be hitting their heart at all different levels through all different approaches in our conversations. The Deuteronomy 6 thing, when you get up in the morning, when you go to bed at night, you're constantly talking to your kids, you're constantly sounding out where they are in their heart and trying to really draw them out and address them in forms where they're not in rebellion, they're having actual questions about things. And you try to work through them with those types of things. And if you don't do that sort of work, the kid goes on his own way and figures you don't care, or he's just not going to bother talking to you. And you're going to end up with a rebellious child years later if you did a great job early on.
That's, but I understand the distinction in the question of, do you expect it or are you working towards it? Because to me, this training in righteousness, that if you can do it right away completely with a happy heart, that's perfection.
Yeah, exactly. It'd be wonderful, but don't expect that.
Here's the way I look at it, and tell me what you think about it. Kids we're all very selfish, especially young kids. And at a young age, younger than one, or I don't know exactly where it switches over, but I don't think kids really love their parents. Their parents make them happy. It's a selfish feeling. They want to feel good. and they don't appreciate the loving that we show them. So we train them to when they can consciously understand, my parents love me, this is why they do this, this is why you train them to, they should want to please you and do it with a joyful spirit to show their love for you as you have for them. Otherwise, you know, they'll never understand that you're doing it. Once they can understand
that yeah.
they love you, once they understand, oh, I can make my parents happy, they should do it with the joyful spirit to show love for you.
Yeah.
Because we're all selfish.
Yeah, I agree with that. I'm glad you said that. You know, I had that in an early lesson. I had children don't really love their parents when they're younger. And my wife said, take that out. Mothers will never believe that.
Yeah.
I said, why won't they believe it? She said, they will not believe it. She said, take it out. That's yeah. okay. So,
yeah, I don't have
Ethan,
kids.
Ethan
yeah,
said it.
I don't have kids. I just see.
Thank you, Ethan.
I don't think kids love their parents at a young age.
Not really. They're little sinners.
Parents feed them. Parents give them nap times. Parents give them hugs.
Yeah.
Parents say it's okay. They clean up their bruises. They put them to bed and sing them, you know, a bedtime story or whatever.
Yeah.
But
the little faces light up and you're
yeah.
I think that's right on, though, because we have that conversation with Jaden a lot. And he'll come in and he'll curl up and he'll be like, I love you. And we always, I mean, one thing you can do if you really love us is obey. Like, that's
yeah.
how you can show us. And we almost always tie in. Jaden's favorite song is Trust and Obey. So
yeah.
If he ever asks us what we're going to sing on Sunday nights, it's Trust and Obey. But we always tie that trust and obey. We want him to know
yes.
on our side, the reason he needs to obey us is because he trusts that we love him. Like, that's...
Yes.
We don't tell you to obey because we want to take all the fun out of your life.
Right.
You obey us because we love you, and you need to trust that we love you. And so in training him to obey, we're training him not just to obey, you know, but to obey because he trusts us.
Yes.
And I think that's right on. I mean,
yeah. Thank you for that insight. Yeah. Yeah. That's again. We're going for the heart. See, all these things kind of overlap, and we'll hit that harder later because that's so important. It's so easy just to mechanically do certain things the correct way, and miss the heart. And we don't want to do that. So good observation. Let me. I think I'm gonna be told about bells here in a minute, so I'm gonna go ahead and try and beat it to the punch, and just let me pray, and we'll pick up next time. Father, we just thank you for the good discussion, the insights that you give your people. Thank you for your word to guide us and set sort of the boundary lines for us, and sometimes to give us wisdom to sort out those things that are in between the guardrails, keeping our car in the right lane and so forth. Yeah, figuratively speaking with our kids, and. Pray that you would give us wisdom as we face the day-to-day situation, especially those who are still in the trenches today with their kids. They're facing a lot of things, and they get hit with a situation, and they sometimes don't have time to sit down and analyze it all. They have to make the best decision they can, and help them to develop good reflexes and responses, and through this training process, that they themselves become trained in righteousness so that they can pass that on as a godly heritage to their children. We pray in Christ's name, amen. You're dismissed.